And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello there. It's me. It's your local basketball friend. It's Eric Corrine from The Athletic. This is Jurassic Pod. And it is, with the exception of a few games still to be played on Thursday night, none of them by the Toronto Raptors, it is All-Star break. We made it. We did it.
We did make it. We did it.
Joining me.
All of those minutes we were playing, we really earned this break.
Exactly. 40 minutes every night for me. joining me on the other line from somewhere else in Toronto, it is Jurassic Pod's Winter Olympics correspondent, Holly McKenzie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little tired. We had some skating very early this morning, but yeah, all good. I'm going to be really empty when the Olympics are finished.
Yeah.
Already thinking about that.
As we discussed last week, I haven't been nearly as into them. And like sometimes I'm just getting my brother right now, who works for Sportsnet, is doing editing shifts from 1 a.m. to 10 a.m. And he'll just send like obscure messages into our group chat that just say, wow, from 4 a.m. or something. And I'm like, I wake up, I'm like, I have no context for this. I appreciate
that the group chat is like a place for him to funnel all of that, like that energy and emotion when he's alone and just needs to, like, he knows you're not awake, but it just is that feeling of like needing to share.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Same. I do the same on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Twitter is for. I try to provide some context, but yeah, it's not a daily, but an almost daily amusement to see what I will have to discover happened while I was in my first of seven REM sleeps over the night. The Raptors played on Wednesday night, which is why I cannot watch the, well, it's not why, there are many reasons. I did not watch the third period of the Canadian women's gold medal win over the United States in hockey, 3-2.
Were you writing at that point?
Well, I finished and I watched, I finished watching the second period, and long story short, we had to take Nico, our cat, or my wife took Nico to a scheduled vet appointment. But that involves getting her to take some drugs in the morning so she chills out when she's there. And you have to give it to her 2 hours in advance. I had that in mind, and I was wondering, do I want to stay up till 1:30 or not? And I mean, I was reading in bed anyway, and I saw what the final was.
It actually finished early. Like, it finished earlier than that because I ended up watching the end of the Warriors Nuggets game, which was great.
I saw the end of that. The women's game was still going at that point because I saw Monte Morris hit the game winner. And I think that was at the second intermission of the Canadian game. Anyway.
Okay, well, maybe that's why I had the basketball game on. I had a hockey on.
Yeah.
Amazing. It just has to be the Olympics for me to watch hockey.
Yeah. good on the women. Marie-Philippe.
Yeah, they're Blair, awesome, man.
Sarah Nurse and the rest of the team. That's
my favorite thing is learning how many people are tangentially related to Kia Nurse and her siblings, her cousins, her uncles, her aunts, her parents, like, holy, that family tree. Incredible.
Yeah. They are good at the sports and also many things. Like, they're just also charismatic people who seem like they would excel in any number of fields.
Yes, just lovely, lovely powerhouses.
Yeah. On the same night as all those things happened, the Raptors beat the Minnesota Timberwolves in an equally big moment to head into the All-Star break at 32-25. Not much needed, but a nice win after losing two in a row to end their eight-game win streak. So they enter in seventh place in the East, a half game behind Boston. Were the Boston Celtics once coached by Dwayne Casey? Because they followed up beating Philly by 48 by losing to the Pistons. So that seems like a very Raptors thing to do.
Listen, I'm also, yeah, I'm going to argue that it was a much needed win in Minnesota, because when you lose by 30 to the Pelicans,
yeah,
it's a must win after
that. So half game behind Boston, 1.5 ahead of Brooklyn, 10th in offensive rating, 13th in defensive rating. Since we last talked to you, we're talking to you a little later than planned, but it works out well because we do have this natural break in the schedule to assess things. The Raptors won in Oklahoma City fairly comfortably, in as comfortably as a game. And it was as comfortable as a game can be in which Pascal Siakam played 41 minutes or something. they won in Houston, 139 to 120, lost by 1 point to the Denver Nuggets, and Nikola Jokic doing Nikola Jokic things. He did those things again last night in Golden State, as we alluded to. The aforementioned loss to the Pelicans, which is right up there for, I mean, I guess non-Pistons division for the worst Raptors game of the season. And then finish it off with a win in Minnesota, 103-91. Before we get to the specifics and where we stand, the big moment we missed over the week was the trade deadline, which happened a week ago from when we were recording. The Raptors got Thad Young and a second round pick, as well as Devin Eubanks, who was promptly waived. For a lottery protect, I mean, what amounts to a lottery protected first round pick, this year, if it doesn't convey, it becomes next year top 13 protected. And if it doesn't convey, then it becomes 2 second round picks, for that pick, and Goran Dragic. What was your initial reaction, and how do you feel now that you've seen him play, but also now that you got to see the deadline play out, what moved, what, or who moved, who didn't, what type, they are people, which as we've discussed, the trade deadline makes you forget. So your overall thoughts, yeah.
Yes, I hate the trade deadline.
That's been established, yes.
I'm pleased with it, you know? Going into the deadline, I don't think that was what I, like, that wasn't a name that I had expected to end up in Toronto, but I am a big fan of Thad. I think he's super, super, super close with former Raptor CJ Miles, which to me kind of says everything about who he is as a person, because, you know, CJ is up there at the top of the list of NBA dudes you want on your team, in your locker room, to talk to interview. Yeah, CJ's great. Thad is also great. And I think he'll fit into the locker room really well. I think he's a really smart player. Even though he's only had a couple games with the team, you're already kind of seeing him figure out things. You saw it last night in Minnesota. Not a surprise. Like, he's a veteran, but nice to have. And yeah, I don't think you can ever have too many, like, really smart, great veteran locker room guys. I think, again, the issues that we had talked about, just having like a crazy sharp shooting 3-and-D guy. I mean, that's difficult to get the guy that I think fans were dreaming about.
I mean, none of those guys really moved. That's the thing.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, the price is very high. So yeah. And then a lot of other people wanted the team to, you know, get a big, get a center. But I think I'm happy with the move. Pleasantly surprised and happy. What about you?
Yeah, at the beginning, I was like, really? We're doubling down on this sort of style? And this is coming from...
But they are.
This is coming from someone who's like admired Thad Young's game for a while. I thought he was like really good for the Bulls last year. And obviously in a different situation in San Antonio this year, they're steering toward the future. But I... So initially when I was like, oh, they're giving up a pick... it confused me a bit, but at the end of the day, like, you're giving up fifth.
Oh no. He went to at the end of the day.
No, at the end, this, it's more positive than that. Like, okay. I do get it. Like, you're giving up 15 spots in the draft or so, which isn't nothing. I don't want to say that, but you know, the Raptors have, you know, rightly or wrongly, they believe that they are very capable in the draft and are capable of finding productive players wherever and in a weak group. Maybe they think what they value will be as attainable or nearly as attainable at 32 or 31 as it would be at 16 or 17. Obviously, track records overall don't show that, but you know, this isn't about overall, this is about one specific case. So I was surprised that a first round pick went for Thad Young, but when you think about the second round pick coming back, it makes sense. And then when you view Young as sort of first and foremost an upgrade over the minutes that, as I wrote in my column that day, that day were or usually were not going to Svi Mykhailiuk and Yuta Watanabe, that's a plus. When you look at it as insurance for, you know, literally anybody except for Van Vliet or Trent getting injured, that's a good thing. And then you get his bird rights, which I don't think are terribly valuable given his age, but like it is another player who you can bring back in addition to still having the mid-level exception, the full mid-level to use next year, and possibly bringing back Chris Boucher. So I know, you know, there's a lot of talk about what they didn't do, the rumored trade that would have brought Talen Horton-Tucker and maybe Nerlens Noel, that, you know, more traditional rim-running, rim-protecting center. That didn't happen. There were talks about Nick Claxton that the Raptors didn't end up making that trade. That might have solved some of their center problems, but they would have had to sort of figure out what to pay him in the offseason. And, you know, I think part of the Raptors' evaluation was very clearly they didn't want to take on money beyond next season when Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. could be up for some for new contracts. So I get it. You know, it certainly doesn't address their biggest need, but at the price they paid, it is an, you know, it is a tangible upgrade over, and not only that, but a potentially meaningful upgrade over what they were getting out of that roster spot, which was obviously nothing. And Thad looked right, as you mentioned. He looked like he belonged against Minnesota as both like a connecting passer, a guy who can do a little bit more off the bounce, a little bit more reliably than some of the Raptors' other players. And yeah, like he's when you have a bunch of those players who play like that or aspire to play like that, it's good to have somebody who has done it since 2007. So I would give it like a solid B or B minus, like as a trade. Like it's a fine move and it makes sense to me. And I'd prefer that they did it versus didn't do it, but it's not doing it. Yeah, but it certainly did not. You know, the first two games, or not so much the Denver game, but the two road games we saw like how poor the half-court offense was at varying times. The Raptors went 31 minutes without a three against New Orleans, against Minnesota while still winning that game. So yeah, there are holes, but I'm generally on the plus side, I think.
I'm glad. I would have been upset if you were extremely negative.
Yeah, it's just hard because like this was their chance to add a player both for this year and next year. And it's just not precisely what they needed. At the same time, I don't think it's like a wild overpay. It makes sense to me.
That's the thing. To get what, you know, people were hoping for, they would have had to make that decision. And I think it's better that they didn't. For the reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah, and if they had given up the first round pick without getting that second round pick back, and it belongs to Detroit, so it's going to be, you know, 31st or 32nd or 33rd, like that would have been concerning, I think.
And I understand why the team does feel relatively confident in their ability to find guys in the draft. Like, around
that spot. They've been, I mean... Flynn is the closest to that, and that as a, I don't want to say his career has been determined yet. He hasn't been a success yet, but they've had successes, you know, in the late to mid 20s, which isn't that different from the 30s. They've had some second round successes, you know, Delano Banton so far this year, and that was afterward at 45, I think. I always get confused.
I think it was 40.
Because does he wear 45 or 46?
He wears 45.
So I think he was picked 46th. Like I invert the two numbers. Anyway, the Raptors aren't a perfect drafting team, just like, you know, they're not perfect in any other aspect, but their track record is better than most of its competition. So I get it.
Yes.
Makes sense. Not what you want. Not what you want in terms of like a perfect fit.
It wasn't the big splashy move that everyone was like hoping for to get super excited about, but I think it was a positive addition, and that's sometimes all you can hope for on the deadline day. You don't really know how it's going to unfold, what prices are going to be, who's looking to move. Yeah. I think it's good.
So based on everything else that happened on trade deadline day or leading up to trade deadline day, we had Cleveland adding Caris LeVert. We had obviously the huge Ben Simmons, James Harden trade. We had Milwaukee.
I still can't believe so many things relating to deal.
We had Milwaukee adding another chef in the kitchen and Serge Ibaka, but getting rid of Dante DiVincenzo. And I sort of think they're a bit, not that DiVincenzo is amazing, but like they don't have much. That the way that the Raptors have like no sort of wing shooting and that type of perimeter player, though the Bucks are now relatively short on it, beyond their starters and Grayson Allen, and there's not, I know I'm missing it, Pat Connaughton, who I think got injured. For a championship contender, I mean, they don't have much. Does anything that, or how did everything that happened at the deadline really, does it make you think that much has changed for the Raptors in regards to this year?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just the Sixers, like looking at how they will look, what they will become. You know, you already have Joel Embiid, and now you have Harden added to that mix. Like, I don't know how that's going to work, but it is interesting. And I think the biggest thing, honestly, one of the biggest things for the Raptors that I've been watching, even though I don't want to watch it, has been the Celtics. They've been incredible.
Oh, yeah, that was a big one. And I like Derek White. I don't think like he was a perfect fit for either the Celtics or the Raptors, but he's certainly like a good, solid, you know, second or third guard. And that's big. The Celtics were on fire doing the old Raptors thing against not great competition until they did the other old Raptors thing, as I mentioned, and lost to the Pistons.
Right. Yeah, no, they've been awesome. So I think that's like where I'm kind of focused right now, is like what's going to happen with Philadelphia. And I've just been unable to look away from the Celtics as much as I don't love watching the Celtics.
Yeah, and the Nets are just so intriguing. I mean, first of all, because they're eighth, which nobody saw coming. But, you know, if and when they get a healthy Durant back, and Simmons presumably joins around then. So who knows? Maybe it's the Raptors back-to-back against the Nets at the end of I feel like these things, like, you remember Kobe came back from his Achilles to play the Raptors. Mm-hmm. I think Steph Curry came back from his broken hand to play the Raptors. It feels like Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons would like return and come back to play the Raptors. That just feels like a thing that would happen.
It just feels right. I was going to tell you something and now I can't remember what it was. Damn it. Keep talking.
Anyway, how they improve. You can't underestimate getting Seth Curry, even though like he struggled recently in Philadelphia. Like, I think that's a huge piece for them, particularly without Joe Harris. So they're, again, as I said, a game and a half behind the Raptors. And I think if and when Durant comes back healthy, you expect them to go on a bit of a tear the rest of the way. But
Also, also the way the standings are right now, like, you know, who knows how it's going to shake out at the end, but the top teams in the East could be in for a really tough first round series if things kind of stay as they are.
Well, yeah, like one of, like, if you just think of it this way, one of Chicago, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and I'm missing one team. Did I say Chicago?
Miami,
Chicago. Miami, Chicago, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and, oh, people are just screaming at me who the other team is.
Milwaukee?
Well, we can't just keep on saying teams. Like
I don't know what
Milwaukee, Chicago, Brooklyn, Miami, and Philly. Yeah, one of those five teams isn't going to the second round. And I think, like, given the way the
book... Okay, I didn't know what point you were trying to make, so that's why I was like, I don't know
where... So one of those teams is losing in the first round if they get to the first round. Obviously, some of those teams could, you know, lose theoretically lose in the play-in tournament. So, and that would be a massive disappointment, I think, for any of those teams. Maybe.
Yeah, the East is good. East is it's wild. Weird.
It's like... And, like, the Raptors and the Celtics, at the very least, are legitimately, like, I don't want to play those teams in the first round. And, like, Atlanta is super talented, you know, and Charlotte can, I'm not the biggest Charlotte fan, but they can certainly, you know, put up 130 on you, no problem. So.
They can put up 130, but they'll give up 150.
Exactly. So. Like, so, I mean, I think... You know, right now, as we speak, the play-in would be Toronto and Brooklyn for the 7-8 or for the 7th seed, and then Charlotte, Atlanta for the 9-10 game, and, you know, the winner of that versus the loser of Toronto, Brooklyn playing for the 8th seed. And, like, those are four pretty, I think I would say they're two good teams and then two interesting teams that have a lot of ways that have a lot of ways to win a game.
Sure. So the playoffs in the East, the first round and the play-in will be really interesting. And I remember what I was going to say when you said wild. It reminded me, you know what else was wild to me? That the deadline day fell on the same day as the All-Star drafting of the teams.
Oh, my God, what a highlight.
Come on, the NBA.
Kevin Durant.
The NBA knows drama.
Kevin Durant's performance in not picking James Harden was, like... You know, the Oscar nominees came out this week, and, you know, best short film, I don't know, their best supporting actor.
Incredible. Just
the straightest of faces. Incredible. As he gave the complete strategic breakdown of why he was taking Rudy Gobert over James Harden. You know, props to LeBron and Charles Barkley for their work and just sort of egging him on and laughing, but Durant just killed it. Man,
the NBA always just has these amazing, I don't even know if they're coincidences, but just where things fall, like, and there's always, like, after a trade, two teams will end up facing off against each other.
I mean, like, the trade deadline's always on a Thursday, and, like, Thursday is the NBA's day of the week, right? Like, after NFL ends, like, everything's about... You know, there are the Saturday night games on ABC or ESPN, but really, like, TNT Thursday is sort of what we've been dealing with for years. So,
listen, it's been TNT Tuesday this week and this year up until this point.
Yeah. Well,
have you noticed
that? Well, that was because they were avoiding the NFL for a long time.
I know, but it was so confusing because every time that would happen, I would think it was Thursday.
Yeah.
And then I wake up the next day and it's not Friday, it's Wednesday.
But as we've discussed, what are days? So,
true.
Back to the...
Oh, and Fred will be playing with Jamar in the All-Star game, so that's fun.
But that's not new, is it? Anyway.
No, well...
It is fun.
It is new, isn't it? Because they just drafted the teams.
But Fred was already... Oh, they're on the same team. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, I don't mean they're both
no idea who's on every team, except that James Harden is not on
Kevin Durant's team, and now he's not
playing. So that's all I know.
Oh, my goodness. I love the NBA.
Yeah. Quickly, after the loss to New Orleans, the not very good, very bad loss to New Orleans. Nick Nurse said, and Jonas Valanciunas sort of had his way against any number of people. Nick Nurse I think that it's something we're going to have to evaluate just a little bit. When we do come up against a big, really big, a really big, big like that, are we going to stay the way we are, or are we going to try to match one of our centers with them a little bit more? I think we have to evaluate. So, I mean, that's obviously not committing, but committing to thinking about changing the starting lineup for specific matchups. Where do you land on that?
Well, I think I would land...
And just against Minnesota, Kem Birch started because Fred VanVleet was out, so that wasn't really a, you know, anything to do with
anything.
Change in anything.
Well, I do think that having Kem back, and once he is able to get rid of the mask, which has to be infuriating to play with because it looks extremely annoying, I do think that that will help in that regard. But yeah, it's kind of a tough situation when you've made the decision that this is the style of play and the kind of roster you're going with. That's great until you end up with a team where you have a JV or something that you're trying to match up with. Not really shocked, though. I feel like prior to most of this season, what we've seen from Nick has always been in like he's always wanted to switch things up game to game, or like be really flexible, never really commit to something. So
what a millennial.
you know what I mean, though? Like, he's always been like, we'll see, we'll take things as they go, you know? So I kind of feel like it's just going back to that. But again, it would be an easier thing to match up if they had gotten maybe a big in the, like a traditional big in the
trade deadline.
What am I saying? At the deadline. But they didn't. Yeah. What did you think? Or what?
Yeah, I mean, this is something Nick has talked about for years. And like, he's always like, yeah, I don't mind changing my starting lineup from game to game. It doesn't need to be set. Mm-hmm. And then like, he never does it. So like, that's my short way or long way of saying I'll believe it when I see it. But I do like sort of fundamentally believe in it. Like, just because like, it's not good for anybody if OG picks up two early fouls because he's the guy who has to guard Jonas Valanciunas. And, you know, I have no doubt that those smaller lineups will get some minutes, like, even if they're against bigger lineups or a bigger center, at least. But, you know, just doing it from the start maybe puts your guys in a position where they can't impact as much of the game as possible because foul trouble happens. So I think I'm for it, and I think Kem Birch is probably the guy, and I think Scotty Barnes is probably the guy to go to the bench in those situations. We had somebody responded to my Twitter asking about Scotty Barnes going to the bench. Like, I think I would still roll with his starting lineup, save for, you know, a matchup against one of the 10 or so, like, really scary big men in the league. Just because I
still feel like the biggest thing will probably be keeping the lineup the same, but just making quicker.
But they're already sort of doing that. Like the first sub usually happens within 4 or like 5 minutes at the first time out at like the latest. But the problem is like when OG has two fouls, like it's already too late. Like you've already sort of minimized what OG can do in a game, you know?
I think similarly to what you were saying, I'm just used to Nick always saying this, but then kind of keeping the lineup the same and just like making adjustments as the game.
So I would, in short, like I would be for it. I'm skeptical about how much it will actually happen. And I think, like you said, the move that I probably expect to see are some proactive early substitutions, maybe at one foul versus waiting for the second foul.
Versus the two, Or we have Kem in there to start,
So, it is the All-Star break, and that leads me...
Are you excited? Are you excited about the All-Star break?
The break? Did you see the Zoom last night? Because Josh Lewinberg asked Pascal Siakam that question.
I didn't see it.
And Pascal went... Are you looking at me in Zoom right now? It only works if you're looking
at me. I am, yes. A huge grin. Okay, yes. Is that you?
That was Pascal. That was Pascal saying, does it look like I'm excited? I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited. My back started to hurt yesterday. I'm like, it knows it's the All-Star break. Like, my back was just waiting to die on me until I could, like, get a few days to just lie down.
So is that your plan? You're going to lie down? You're going to lie down on the couch, bed, floor? What's the deal?
I do like lying down on the floor.
I thought you did.
There is something.
I feel like you've said that before.
And, like, I feel like couch is not necessarily very good for, you know, restorative purposes. But, you know, I'll be using the heating pad liberally. That's exciting. But beyond me, who do you think needs the All-Star break the most? Pascal Siakam, who has played 40-plus minutes in 9 of his last 11 games. OG Anunoby, who has shot 14 for 45 in his last, I put 5 games, maybe it's 4 games. Or Scottie Barnes, who I think we can fairly say his impact is certainly waning more than it did on a game-to-game basis compared to early in the season. So you have to pick one of those three. Who needs it the most? But he's playing in the All-Star game and shooting in the three-point.
But he's missed the last...
One game.
Two? One.
The last one game.
But he left...
One game and a quarter, yes.
And a quarter, yeah. See, again, days do not matter.
And he missed the game in Houston, I believe, with a quote.
Groin injury.
Yeah, groin injury that I think we're putting in quotes, as he acknowledged. He's like, I think the basic subtext was, I have like 9 injuries. We list a different one.
Yeah, yeah.
But the knee injury, I think, was legitimate because Nick Nurse talked about how he mentioned it specifically to him at halftime of that New Orleans game. Fred, who will obviously be getting some work in, but even if he's at All-Star Weekend, it's not exactly heavy work.
Yeah, yeah.
Who needs it the most?
And then the team doesn't play till Friday, so they actually do have like a pretty good
break
after. So that's good. And for the guys who aren't there, it's like a full week, which is awesome. I'm going to say Pascal, just because he's been taking such a huge load since he's returned, and he's been doing so many things and his minutes have been extremely high. But I definitely think everyone will benefit. And I think Scotty will probably see the impact of the break in a positive way, the most on Scotty, just because I feel like at this point in the season, rookie legs have to be feeling the weight. New?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
OG's play just hasn't been...
I knew you were going to say OG.
...standard over the last few weeks. So I don't know, like, you know, try to get an honest assessment of how he's feeling out of OG Anunoby. Like, you can spend your time better, I think, by doing anything else. But I guess I'm hopeful that he needs it the most, because that would suggest the greatest potential growth for the team, if that makes sense.
Good answer. I like it.
He just, like, spending so many minutes or guarding centers, and then... like so many,
and like having to battle
and like posting up himself like a lot, and he's just, you know, the shots aren't falling for him, and that might have very
little to
do
with... Did you notice in the Minnesota game?
Go on, sorry.
Did you notice in the Minnesota game there was a moment where, I mean, Patrick Beverley was just being Patrick Beverley, but I don't know exactly what preceded it, but like on the broadcast you saw Scotty like pull OG back. Like, OG was really mad, and you rarely see that kind of like emotion or like aggravation.
I think that was after he got the flagrant, right? Maybe I'm wrong, but Patrick Beverley gave him a forearm shiver to the upper chest / lower neck on a screen, and OG responded by trying to seal him off by throwing those hips into Patrick Beverley. I think, you know, both were guilty of a lot. One got called for more than the other, and we can leave it at that.
I know you're not supposed to officiate based on reputation, but I feel like if you're seeing a guy make a move like that on Patrick Beverley, you kind of have to know that it's a retaliation move, no?
Yeah, I think like Patrick Beverley just, and we're going to talk about Gary Trent soon, so this is a fine way to segue. Like, starting off the game by being annoying is a good way of like setting the baseline to allow the rat, like, I'm going to be annoying all game. Are you really going to call everything against me? Like, I think that has to be Patrick Beverley's, like, sort of mindset. Like, this is me. This is what I'm doing. You can't call 9 technicals on me. Although, you could call 2, and then that would be that. But I think there is some method to that madness of, I'm going to be a pest, and let's really see if you're going to do anything about this, officials. I thought that was one of the worst officiated games I've seen this year. And that, you know how rarely I'll say that, because I think it's such a lazy, myopic way of viewing a game. But I thought the Raptors were pretty hurt by it, to be honest. And that they won is nice. But yeah, Patrick Beverley, certainly an irritant.
He crossed the line for me when he shoved Chris Paul in the playoffs last year. Like, that was sort of the moment where I was like, because I had really liked watching Patrick Beverley. I really like his story. You know, I just thought he's super energetic, kind of guy that you want on your team, like, even though he drives you nuts if you're not playing against him. But that, like, the Booker stuff in that series last year, and then the way that series kind of concluded where he shoved Chris Paul from behind.
Yeah. I don't remember the exact incident, but I remember it being a thing. Yes.
That was that for me.
Yeah, so that's fair. Raptors who interacted with him strongly stayed in the game, and the Raptors won. So living well is the best revenge, Holly. Speaking of living well, I'm just going to let you go off on Gary Trent and his whole night on Wednesday. Like, whatever you want to talk about regarding Gary Trent, whether it's his 30 points, whether it's the Patrick Beverley thing at the beginning, whether it's his dad and his fur coat, whether it's his dad, his fur coat,
and the camera, the phone in his hand, constantly taking videos from his courtside seat of his son, but never cracking a smile, never celebrating, just being cool, cool, cool while watching his son light things up. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. My favorite moment was not in the game at all. It was Gary Trent Jr.'s interview with Nikki Reyes after the game. She asked him about his father's outfit, and you mentioned it on Twitter that he immediately started talking in 2x speed. It was crazy. It was like it was our prepared like riff that you would have, like just like hyping up someone's outfit. It was incredible. He named every
piece of
article and piece and accessory. And it was just so delightful. But also, before Nikki got to the question of the outfit, when she just talked about, you know, your dad's here courtside, the smile on Gary Trent Jr.'s face was such a lovely moment. It was just so sweet. And obviously, he had, in addition to his father, he had a bunch of his family and one of his close friends. I'm sure he had more than one of his close friends, but a bunch of family and friends were there. So it was awesome for them to get to see him. Because again, we've been in a pandemic where people haven't been going to games and getting to see people. So for them to get to see him have a game like that with the Raptors after he's had this amazing run with them this year was just awesome. He was great. And Gary yelling at the opposing bench will, like, I can't tell you how much it fires me up. Like, I just love it. Like, I'm on my couch doing nothing and just feel like I'm ready to, like,
let's go
rumble. Yeah, literally yelling at my TV, like, yes, Gary, because he's just so passionate. Yeah,
I have two tangents on that. The first is that Gary Trent is spending his All-Star break, he said, in Minnesota with his family. So that's why he's doing it. But, like, that's, like, admirable and surprising. Like, I kind of can't believe it, but as you said, it's been a pandemic.
That he's not going to, like,
a just beach, bring your whole family to a beach. But, like, good for him. Like, you don't want to uproot everybody's life just so you can have a nice All-Star break. Like, that's cool.
No, that is really cool.
My second...
And it's very Gary. Like, you can just tell. The thing that I really... And I, unfortunately, because of the pandemic and everything else that's going on and the lack of locker room access right now, I haven't really gotten to talk to Gary one-on-one at all. I don't know. I'm guessing you probably have at this point.
Just on the phone, like, for the feature I wrote about him and his dad last year. But beyond that, the first time I met him in person was at Summer League. And Masai introduced him to me. And, like, in my head, I was thinking, oh, yeah, like, I covered this guy and wrote a feature on him, but I'm just now meeting him. That was a weird experience.
It's weird, right? It's a very weird process, the way things have unfolded. But, yeah, I haven't gotten to, like, talk to him one-on-one at all. But the one thing that always stands out to me in his Zooms and, like, post-game interviews and, you know, whether it's on TV or, like, the actual Zoom where he's speaking to the media, he's so... like, humble, yes. Like, when he's speaking about his own game, he always deflects to other people, to the training staff, his coaching staff, his teammates. But he's so giving of his time, which I really appreciate. Like, it doesn't matter what the question is, if it's about his current performance, if it's about something in the past, if it's, you know, if it's about his dad, his teammates, he is always, like, willing to really engage, and he's very thoughtful. And I know he's, you know, quieter than maybe a Fred or a player that, like, we're used to being the quote, but I just really admire the way that Gary treats people, including media, who really, you know, it's not like we're doing much for him. we can't really, like, further his whatever, but I have a really big soft spot for Gary Trent Jr.
He's certainly a fun type of personality to have on the team you're rooting for. I imagine Raptors fans are really enjoying his season. My second tangent on that is I was reading a column by a writer today, and on that website, the ad at the top was...
This feels very...
For Prada accessories, led by the basketball that he wore that one game as an accessory. And I thought that was funny.
He's extremely fun, and that's it. It's this blend of, like, this really fun, exciting, like, over-the-top character, but then he also is, like, really thoughtful and sweet, and it's such a neat mix. The way you presented that, I thought you were going to talk about the article without mentioning the site or the author, and I was like, this is weird. It wasn't about the article at all.
And I don't feel like getting into a political...
The story wasn't about the article at all. It was about the
okay.
Ad. But
Gary Trent, fun. Good, enjoyable. The Raptors, let's take a deep breath. We know where they are. We know that they're, I would say, and Las Vegas would say, considering their over-under was, I think, 35.5 wins, and they're now at 32. Mm-hmm. They're ahead of expectations. So going into the second half, where are you with this team? Just overall, and... if you want to name a concern or two, feel free to go ahead.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, honestly. I mean, I know that it's easy to look at the stretches that have been disappointing, especially coming off that Pelicans loss. I'm so glad that they're now going into the break with a win as opposed to that, because that was just, like, a really bad taste. but yeah, I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, if you would have told someone, you know, at the break, this is going to be their record, I think everyone would have taken that, especially if you told them Pascal's going to miss as much time. You're going to have this many games together with, like, your core. Scotty Barnes is going to have this kind of a start, like a great start, but then, like, taper off a bit and obviously kind of I hate to say the rookie wall, but like feel the season.
Yeah.
I think everyone would have taken that. Kem is going to have 18 different injuries and a broken nose. Unfortunately, like, yeah, I think anyone would have taken that. Dragic isn't going to appear. Yeah.
You're going to have like just no perimeter. You're going to have no perimeter players off the bench. Just none of them.
You're going to have a 6-man rotation for, yeah.
Yeah, for like, no, 3 weeks in January and February, you're going to play 6.5 players.
And health and safety protocols, that nightmare that was in December. Like, I definitely think all of those things considered, the team is in a really good position when you factor in those things. But yeah, the biggest, I mean, you say beyond injuries, but I think the biggest thing, like, you mentioned it in that Minnesota game. When Fred VanVleet is on the bench or if he's not available, the team can go 31 minutes without a three-pointer. And that is definitely a concern.
Yeah, and you know, I think
if you're not hitting threes, you're gonna be in trouble.
Yeah, and like it became particularly notable as OG Anunoby's play has like sort of dipped over the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's Fred, it's Gary, and it's nothing. Like I mean, Chris Boucher and Precious.
But then you have Chris Boucher and Precious like coming in hot huge, in the fourth quarter, which was incredible.
Threes, but, like, you're not feeling good about those opportunities, and it's not going to change. You know, those threes in isolation are huge, but the reality is they're not going to change the way anybody's defending you at any point. So, I mean, that's my way of saying it's still the half-court offense. It's still the thing we thought would be the concern.
That's still the concern. Yeah.
They, you know, according to Synergy Sports, and this was in my column at The Athletic, saying that...
Subscribe to The Athletic. Yeah,
sure. Do that. They are 25th in half-court offense, and they are 32 and 25. The five teams behind them in half-court offense are 92 and 201. So, like, that, and if memory serves, it's the Pelicans, Pistons, Rockets, maybe the Magic and Thunder. Like, those, I think those are the five teams. Did I say Knicks? The Knicks are definitely one of them. Anyway.
You didn't.
Okay, so I maybe the Magic are ahead of them. I don't know. But the point is, the teams are bad. And that, like, simultaneously says, like, Nick Nurse is doing a great job with like, and getting the most out of this roster. And that's, like, I think at the heart of your first answer, which is, like, things are going pretty well. Like, you know, considering everything that happened, considering the limitations on this roster, things are going well. But if you're looking toward the playoffs, and, you know, the playoffs are sort of a bonus for this team and any playoff games they get to play, like, I think this team expects to be in a playoff series this year. And they expect to compete in it. But if they expect to do more than compete, if they expect to really make noise, really scare one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, they've got to not necessarily fix the half-court offense, but they've got to go from like 20, they've got to go from bad to slightly below average. And
I was going to say average.
Yeah, no, like average would be great.
I guess they've done such a great job at managing with a limited half court offense that
and like some of these interior passing plays with like Scotty and Thad and Boucher, like they're so impressive because they happen within like 12, like there's a 12-foot triangle of Raptors, and that doesn't happen in the NBA anymore. Like reminds you of the 80s almost, like the rapid passing within a small place. And it's great they can make these passes, but, you know, against the best defenses in the league, you know, I'm concerned that, and, you know, space closes down on you. And yeah, so, I mean, that's not surprising given the composition of this roster, but it does definitely, if that doesn't improve, puts a hard cap on what they can do in April. And, you know, maybe May. Just to wrap this up, the rest of the way, the Raptors have 13 road games, 12 home games, all of which may be able to be played in front of a full arena. I feel many ways about that, but the Raptors are excited, so that's good. But despite that relatively even home and road split, 11 of the first 15 games after the break are on the road. So those, particularly that first trip, which comes against the 9th, 10th, and 8th seeds, Charlotte, Atlanta, Brooklyn, and then a home game against mm-hmm. Brooklyn, those will be rather big games. Overall, though, their average opponent winning percentage is 48.6 or 486, which is one of the easier schedules in the league. So there's an element of this isn't too tough of a schedule, but also there's a lot of pressure on them coming right out of mm-hmm. the gate. So,
mm-hmm. And yeah, it's also crazy that
they need to be ready.
And they won't play their next home game until March.
Yeah, March 1st.
That's wild. The way that this road trip spans the break and then after the break. It's a wild.
They have three home games and then they have a 6-game road trip, four of which I'll be on, hopefully, if I don't get sick. Before we get to the All-Star and some questions, I'm going to give you like 90 seconds to talk about DeMar DeRozan.
I appreciate that. DeMar DeRozan, I wish I could say what you had written in your
I can say it. But I won't. He's the first player in NBA history to score 35 plus points with at least 50% field goal percentage in all of the games in 7 straight games.
Oh, I have the rundown in front of me. I mostly meant what you referred to him as.
Yeah. There were many celebratory curses in DeMar's name. Yes.
Yes, you wrote his name in a way I had never seen, but I think he would approve.
De freaking Rosen, except with expletives instead of TBS or TNT dubs.
But he's been freaking good. He's been incredible. It's so fun to me to see Bulls writers, bloggers, fans, members of Bulls Twitter, you know, all kind of uniting to be like, this has been such a joy. And like every game we've gotten to watch from him this season has been a gift. Because that's how I have felt about DeMar DeRozan his entire career, even when things haven't gone as planned in postseason matchups. I'm thrilled for him. He has been incredible. Gosh, the Bulls have had such a fun season and then have just been hit with so many really unfortunate injuries and are managing injuries right now. You know, LaVine is out because of a knee thing. He's expected to play an All-Star, but it's just, I hope that people can stay healthy, come back and get healthy. I really want to see what they could do. I do not want to see the Raptors play the Bulls or the Heat in the first round. So that's fun.
Well, there's a good chance they'll play one of them if they make it there.
But DeMar has been incredible and he's the MVP of my heart.
And I put him in the straw poll from ESPN's Tim Bonton. I put him 5th on my fictional MVP ballot at this point of the year.
I love it. He's number 1 on mine.
Okay.
I mean, in my heart.
Yeah, no, I know. Just for any...
It's awesome.
Yeah. What else can you say? I had Jokic, Embiid, Giannis, Chris Paul, DeMar DeRozan. Anyway, they've all been very good. And
Chris has been great. His fourth quarters?
He's good.
Ridiculous.
And just to wrap up the DeMar section, Kevin Durant tweeted this morning, "Thank you for setting a great example and playing the game with supreme skill, DeMar DeRozan." Which is...
I didn't see that. That's so lovely.
Yeah, Twitter can be okay sometimes.
There's a GQ cover story of DeMar that I haven't read yet. I'm saving it for when I'm fully done work leading into the weekend. But he talks about calling Kyle and crying after the trade.
I read a good story.
Oh, you did? I'm
always,
great.
Always nice to see DeMar get some pub. Quickly, before we get to some questions, All-Star Weekend predictions. Before I say who's in the skills competition, I actually have a description of what the skills competition is. So that can allow us to, you know, make or not make an informed guess here. So the format, each of the three teams will compete in 3 rounds: shooting, passing, and a relay. In the shooting game, each player will shoot from 5 different spots on the court to score as many points as they can in 30 seconds. In the passing game, the teams will have to hit passes into oversized moving targets to score points. The relay is similar in format to what the individual skills challenge involved in previous years, with a mix of passing, dribbling, and shooting. After the 3 rounds, The two teams with the most points will advance to the final round, which is a race to make a half-court shot. Which is, I mean, really a stupid way.
The half-court shot is way too easy for the...
It's simultaneously way too easy and way too random to, like, actually determine a competition that you're supposed to take seriously. And maybe you're just not supposed to take it seriously.
Also, the teams, I want to know how the teams came to be. But
anyway,
continue.
So there are Team Cavaliers, Jarrett Allen, Darius Garland, and Evan Mobley. Team Antetokounmpo, Alex, Giannis, and Thanasis. And Team Rooks, Scotty Barnes, Cade Cunningham, Josh Giddey. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Rooks, but don't think it's because this is a Raptors pod. It's because I love rookies, and I love all three of these players. And Josh Giddey, whew. Three triple-doubles in a row.
Yeah, is he, where is he on the all-hair team? Is he first-team all-hair right now?
First of all, he's an incredible player.
That's fine.
Get caught up in that. But he looks like he could star in a CW teen drama. Like, his hair is perfect.
I'll take the rookies, too. Because I basically think Josh Giddey's going to kill the passing competition.
Yeah, I want to know how they came up with these three teams. It just seems so random.
Yeah, whatever. I've always thought all versions of this event have been lacking, except that one year in Toronto when, like, I think it was Carl Towns who won it, and it was like a big man bracket and a small and like a guard bracket, and like all of the bigs like mobbed Carl Towns when he won. Excuse me if it wasn't Towns. I think it was. That shows you how much I care about the skills competition.
I used to love the skills comp, but I have no recollection of who wins. I can't even remember who wins the 3-point from that year.
So. We'll go to the dunk contest since there are no Raptors in that one. I will go from the player with the best odds to the worst odds. We got Jalen Green, Obi Toppin, Cole Anthony, and Juan Toscano-Anderson. Who's winning?
I think Jalen Green's going to win, but I'm going with Cole Anthony only because I want
the interview.
The interview at the end, yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking Green as well, but the most memeable moment will almost certainly belong to Cole Anthony. He will be a great showman. 3-point contest. The two favorites, according to the article on The Athletic I'm reading now, are...
Subscribe to The Athletic.
Patty Mills and Fred VanVleet, co-favorites.
I was going to say, continue.
And then going in descending order from there, Trae Young, Desmond Bain, Zach LaVine, Luke Kennard, CJ McCollum, and Karl Anthony Towns.
I was going to say Patty Mills. I did not know that he was a favorite, but I was going to say Patty Mills or Kennard.
I'm taking CJ. I don't know. He's good.
He's very good. He was very good the other night against the Raptors.
That's my analysis. He's good. and then you want to pick an All-Star Game MVP?
I don't know. Do you have a pick?
I'm picking Giannis. Yeah. Because he's just can put up 35 and 20 on, well, not 20, because there won't be 20 whole missed shots in the game, but 35 and, 12.
Was he the MVP last year? 15 for 15
shooting. I don't know who the MVP last year was.
That's what I mean. I can't remember these things, but was it him last year?
Well, let's look. 2021 NBA All-Star MVP was Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I thought so.
So I'll pick him.
So sure.
2020 was Kawhi Leonard, which seems like really weird that Kawhi Leonard actually won an All-Star MVP. It seems like the last thing that he would win. Kevin Durant in 2019.
2020, was that the Kyle Lowry
charge year?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah,
right before the pandemic hit. Okay, so few quick questions before we get out of here. we got a question, and she sent me the way to pronounce her name last week, and now I forget. So I apologize deeply. Ania, I'm sorry. Please send me the pronunciation of your name every week. You send in a question, because I'm just terrible with names. She says, failing to articulate this well today, please reword if needed. But first,
she is definitely on in my my same page as me today.
First, build two Raptors only skills challenge teams, one from the current roster and one from February 2016 when the Raptors hosted the All-Star game. And then, if pitted together, which team would win?
Wow, this is incredible.
So first, you pick the team from this year, and I will look at the 2016 roster and pick that team, and then we will decide who wins.
Are there any requirements? Like, can it be any three players from this year's team? Okay, so I'm going to say Scotty, Fred, and OG.
So you're not putting the guy literally nicknamed P Skills in the skills competition.
That's correct. Because he needs rest. I said he needs rest.
So you're just doing it for his benefit. You're not going all in to win this game.
Well, I still think that they'll. Well, I don't know who I'm competing against, but I think I feel good about this group.
Okay, so I'm going with DeMar and Kyle. And then with my third pick, I'll narrow it down here. We've got Lucas Nogueira. We could put him in there. We could put Jonas in there. We could put Corey Joseph in there. Damari Carroll in there. James Johnson. Terrence Ross. I think I'm going Corey Joseph. I think that gives you the best chance of winning.
I think I would have went Terrence Ross.
Well, for the shooting.
Because he has a lot of experience with all-star events.
Yeah, but you'd have to pass.
Let's be real. Damari Carroll would not have been available.
Wow.
I don't mean that in a mean way. I'm just saying, like, he would have been. We loved Damari. Gosh.
So I think I'm picking this year's team in that, I think.
Even with OG?
Yeah.
Because you said it should have been Pascal.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been. Well, I didn't say, I just questioned you. I didn't say what it should or shouldn't have been. I would never, as a millennial, I would never commit to calling you right or wrong.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Who do you think wins?
That was a great question. Like
much thought into it that I had to answer it.
I love it.
Ali Abassi asks, isn't using Scotty Barnes as a low usage center in our lineup a waste of his talent and a danger to his development? Last night showed us how much he has in terms of half court creation and developing that set of skills could help us with that problem. Do you have a immediate answer to that one?
I do not.
I will say that using him as exclusively a low usage center would be a hindrance to his development, but because he gets so many opportunities as a playmaker, especially when Fred VanVleet isn't on the floor, I think that's limited. It is helpful for him to develop a knack to get his own opportunities when plays aren't run through him. And it is also useful to give him those reps as one of the primary playmakers on the floor. And I think, I totally understand what Ali is saying, which is why, I don't get mad when somebody says, well, what if we started Ken Birch in his place? I think shifting that slightly to Scotty plays a bit more of his minutes without the rest of the starters. I think I would be for that. I don't think it's a huge issue, but I think if we're shifting two or three of his 30 or 35 minutes to a more primary role, I would lean that
with
way.
Non-starters,
I would lean toward that. So, I mean, it's a very minute shift, but that's the way I would go.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think for me, I think this season, the biggest thing is just getting Scotty opportunities in all areas, in every aspect. Like you, I do think that it probably benefits him most when he isn't with the starters, because sometimes when he is with them, you notice him taking a backseat to let them, run the show, which is completely understandable. But Yeah, it would be nice to see.
But him. I do think like those minutes are key because like I do see him chilling in the corner a little too much. And that's an opportunity to learn how to move without the ball a bit better. And that's something as like, you know, even if he becomes a much better shooter, it's hard to see a world in which he is like an elite shooter. Let's not put a cap on him right now, but like he's certainly starting from a low enough place where you don't expect him to become that. Him learning to move without the ball and create opportunities for himself by moving without the ball is an important part of that development. So those minutes aren't lost. But I, as I've said, I would love to see him more as the screener in a pick and roll, even in those starting groups. I'd love to see some Pascal Scotty pick and rolls, although those get negated because it's often similar type players who are guarding those two players. So you don't necessarily get a huge mismatch in that sort of setup. But yeah, I think the spirit of this question, I sort of agree with that we could stand to see a bit, and by a bit, I mean a bit, just a little more time with Scotty in the in a more of a playmaking role. Finally, Thomas asks, I hate to be so forward thinking, but what do you think is a realistic path to getting more shooting next season? I think the answer is simple. It's probably the mid-level exception. I haven't gone through a whole list, but there aren't a huge number of cap level teams next season. There are virtually no like glamorous cap level teams. Or cap space teams rather. So the mid-level exception is going to be pretty valuable, and the Raptors can really target a player who gives them help. We'll see how much stomach they have for taking on future money, how long that mid-level deal, which will be able to start around $10 million, can be. But you know, given that their own free agents, the two guys who you're most targeting at bringing back maybe are Thad Young and Chris Boucher, who don't really address that, I think the mid-level has to be used to address that.
Agreed, for sure.
So that's it. Thanks for the questions, as always. Oh. Holly, we and I will probably be taking next week off, given we set up the post All-Star break. Within that, we'll come to you after the first four games of this of the post All-Star break. Again, those are Charlotte, Atlanta, Brooklyn. Holly, enjoy All-Star weekend, and thanks for joining me.
Yeah, you enjoy your weekend too. Hope the back feels better soon.
Yeah, I will just be lying here on the floor.
Are you going to do anything? Like, are you going to watch anything or read anything?
Well, we have our film club movie to watch this week, which
that
is...
sounds so fancy. Didn't know you were in a film
I think I've mentioned this before, but it's my wife and I and my friend Lindsay and her fiancé. For like the last year and like 4 months, we've had a film club, and like we take turns picking it and then hop on a Zoom at some point.
Do you watch new movies, old movies?
Everybody can choose whatever they want. So I've picked a movie I've already seen this week, but I've forgotten mostly about it, which is A Serious Man from the Coen brothers.
Okay. I have no recollection. Yeah. I don't know what it's about.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I just got, A Secret History, which you recommended, by Donna Tartt. Ooh. Is that what that book is called? Secret History?
Yep. The Secret History.
So yeah. I am reading that and going to see some family, hopefully in a safe way. And that is the plan.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy it. And I hope everybody listening gets to enjoy their break from NBA games each night for the next week.
Holly, thank you. Listeners, thank you. Hopefully everybody can decompress, take some time off Raptors Twitter maybe, and we'll see ya in a few weeks. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.